This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon and welcome to EN4 News with me, Jamie McDonald. Coming up on today's programme, we'll be looking at the SNP's deal with the Greens as the Scottish Budget makes its way through Parliament. As we come on air, MSPs have been in the chamber for just over an hour, with the SNP's Angela Constance getting in an early jibe against Scottish Labour.
It's a shame that he didn't welcome the progress that we've made thus far, despite a very difficult financial position imposed upon us by the UK government and their austerity and cuts. But nonetheless, we have made good progress.
Also today, new figures show a dramatic drop in the number of Scots going to college. Over the last decade, there's been a 38% reduction in people taking places. Scottish Labour's Shadow Education Secretary Ian Gray suggests those missing out are some of the most vulnerable in society.
Those who've been most clearly excluded from our further education system are part-time students, older students, women and people with disabilities who used to study in our colleges.
And is your job safe? Automation could mean swathes of job losses as robots begin to replace humans in the service industry and other sectors. A leading think tank, Centre for Cities, has predicted that 60,000 jobs will be axed in Edinburgh alone. But Simon Jeffrey, who's been involved in the research, remains positive.
Yes, we do not think this is a gloom and doom story, because actually, you know, this is something that's been going on for decades, if not, you know, centuries.
This is Radio Energy News.
But first, here's Kieran Burnett with the EN4 News.
Thank you, Jamie. The Scottish National Party has struck a deal with the Green Party in exchange for significant funding in the lead-up to the first budget bill vote. Finance Secretary Derek Mackay had been negotiating with leaders in the opposition to back his budget proposals because of his party's position as a minority government. Mr. Mackay's proposals include changes to the tax system, while the Greens received low-carbon capital investment and cash for councils. A call to crack down on speeding on Britain's roads has come under fire by the AA. The UK's top roads policing officer, Anthony Bangham, wants to cap drivers to driving only 1 mile per hour over the speed limit, but the AA president, Edmund King, thinks the idea would cause more damage rather than making roads safe.
You need some kind of flexibility. Not all speedometers are 100% accurate. Some of them are about 10% out. And I think the last thing we want is motorists glued to the speedometer all the time to check that they're not a mile above or below the speed limit.
Donald Trump has taken credit for the growth in America's economy during his first State of the Union address last night. The president said there has never been a better time for the American dream, but also said he wants immigration rules tightened. Responding to Trump's statements, Congressman Joe Kennedy spoke directly to the country's unregistered immigrants.
To all the dreamers, let me be absolutely clear. Ustedes son parte de nuestra historia. Vamos a luchar por ustedes. You are part of our story. We will fight for you.
BP have announced the discovery of two large new oil fields in the North Sea. Although it's not currently known exactly how much oil was present, it's thought it could extend oil production in the area until 2050. The company has said it will assess future options when the final amount is told. The Competition and Markets Authority is set to expand operations in Scotland ahead of Brexit. The market watchdog expects to increase its Edinburgh contingent from 3 to 30 employees with ambitions to grow further. Chief Executive Andrea Caselli said that by expanding, the CMA can go further to understand the concerns and issues affecting ordinary people. Prime Minister Theresa May has insisted she's not a quitter as her leadership comes under increased scrutiny. The PM is in China to promote trade with the UK, but is having to focus on matters at home as pressure mounts. Speaking to reporters, Mrs May said she is committed to going through with her plans.
To those young people who worry about whether they'll get their own home, to those parents who are concerned about the education their children will be getting, to people who are worried about the jobs for the future for their children. And that's what we will be doing, and I'm committed to delivering on that.
A Scottish Labour councillor has categorically denied making racist comments about the party's former leadership candidate, Anas Sarwar. David McLachlan was suspended by the party on Tuesday after Mr. Sarwar said a councillor told him Scotland wouldn't vote for a Muslim. Anas Sarwar said he didn't respond to the claims at the time because he was accused of playing the so-called race card during last autumn's Scottish leadership contest. And two of Edinburgh's top care home firms have been barred from taking on new patients after poor results following inspections. The lockdown of the two companies, who have not been named, now mean there could be longer waits for patients to be assigned carers. However, the findings that are based on unannounced visits don't necessarily mean the care standard is below average, but it could be linked to staffing issues and infectious disease. A 63-year-old man has died following an industrial accident at a sewage plant in Whitburn. Emergency services were called at around 10:30 this morning, but the man was pronounced dead on the way to the hospital. A spokesperson for Scottish Water said, "We are aware of an incident earlier today at the wastewater treatment works in Whitburn. Emergency services are attending and we are currently liaising with the operators of the site. A health and safety executive is carrying out an investigation at the plant."
Thanks, Kieran. And as we heard, MSPs are currently voting on the Scottish draft budget at Holyrood. The Scottish Greens are now backing the SNP's proposals, meaning that they have the support that they need. Jack Fairgrieve reports.
The SNP have brokered a deal with the Green Party this afternoon to ensure the Scottish draft budget passes the first stage of voting. The SNP needed the support from just one other party to pass the budget. With this deal, they now have the support they need to see it through the following two stages. Finance Secretary Derek Mackay had been in negotiations with opposing parties to secure backing. "We spoke to the Shadow Cabinet Secretary for Finance, James Kelly, who gave us Labour's stance on today's proceedings.
In terms of what's been proposed by the Scottish Government, I don't think the budget is fit for purpose. And as a result, Labour have proposed an alternative budget. And what we've come out with is a £960 million investment plan. It's a cuts budget. It's taken money out of key services. It's not been honest about how the public sector is supposed to pay public sector pay. It doesn't address some of the major challenges around the NHS. So I don't think it's fit for purpose."
Ian Swanson, the political editor for Edinburgh Evening News, gave us an overview on how we came to this vote.
All the ins and outs. We know what Derek Mackay proposed, first of all, when he unveiled their initial budget proposals back in December. And that was quite a radical package in a way, because it involved quite a lot of changes to income tax. And the Scottish Government, it's only recently that the Scottish Government's had full powers, or nearly full powers, over income tax. But the SNP ones were certainly a change from what went before. And the Greens are likely to have tried very hard to try and get them to go a bit further, because the Greens also support much higher rates right at the top for the highest earners. But we don't know whether that's really succeeded or not.
Mackay spoke with MSPs prior to the vote to give them the details of what's been agreed. They're currently in debate.
And our political correspondent Jack Fairgrieve joins me in the studio now. It's a good result for the SNP then, Jack.
Absolutely. They have every right to be happy with their end result. But not only the SNP, the Green Party should be equally as pleased, because now they've got the backing they need to put through their funding for councils, their low carbon capital investments, and contribution to a fairer pay settlement for the public sector workers. The SNP now have the security they need to push through the next two phases. So absolutely, everyone should be happy with the results.
Thanks, Jack. Now, new figures show the number of people attending college in Scotland has dropped significantly over the last decade. Opposition politicians have hit out at the SNP's record in the wake of the report. Our education correspondent Gregor Thompson has more.
A study conducted by the Scottish Funding Council shows trends in student numbers between the years 2006 and 2017. Though figures show that enrolment from 2015-16 had risen by 3.8% for full-time students, latest reports show that overall numbers have dropped by 38% since 2007. Labour MSP Ian Gray, the Shadow Education Secretary, says that a lack of funds from the SNP government is to blame.
Colleges have been systematically underfunded by the SNP. There were a number of years back in 2013 when they were subjected to appalling cuts, and even this year in the budget, which we'll be debating today, really, once you take out some additional funding for a pay increase for lecturers, colleges are left with a flat cash increase, in other words, another real terms cut in their funding.
Gray also highlighted that it's the minority groups that are being excluded by colleges, such as those with disabilities and mature students. A statement was released from Further and Higher Education Minister Shirley Ann Somerville. It has been read by correspondent Kendall Dick.
Over the last decade, Scotland's colleges have undergone a transformation. They are now delivering more recognised qualifications to students from an increasingly diverse range of backgrounds. This report shows two things, that the quality of learning at our colleges has never been higher, and also that the college sector has equality firmly established at its heart, something we highlighted in a recent government report.
Edinburgh College were unable to speak, so I went down to the Granton campus earlier today to have a look at where government funding has went.
After a quick walk around Edinburgh College, I noticed that most of the facilities seemed up to date, and the whole building itself looks like it's been refurbished fairly recently. A lot of funding has gone into modernising this college. However, is this funding worth it? Well, after about 10 minutes sitting in the cafeteria, I only seem to notice about 5 or 6 students. So it seems that the college itself is becoming quieter, meaning that the idea of college itself is perhaps an unpopular decision.
I spoke to Julia Hart, a local business owner who has been working full-time since she left school and who recently acquired her own shop in South Queensferry. She said that college isn't necessarily for everybody.
I think that unless you are 100% sure of what you want to do and what you want to be is like a doctor or a lawyer, you don't actually need it. Like, so many people are getting degrees and still not getting jobs, so the best thing you can do is get a work ethic, learn how to get out of bed in the morning, learn how to get to work on time, how to deal with customers, whatever it is that your line of work you want to do, the best place to learn is to actually do it.
Despite an increase from last year, there are still many improvements to be made for colleges and their students in Scotland. Mr Gray believes today's budget vote at Holyrood is a first step towards that.
We have the first stage in the debate of this year's budget bill, and I'll be speaking in that debate along with Labour colleagues, arguing that the government should use the new tax powers that this Parliament has to raise significantly more additional funding than they intend to, and we should use that to stop the cuts and begin to reverse some of the impact on areas such as colleges.
It is clear from the people that we have spoken to today that more action needs to be taken to attract more young people into colleges.
Remain voters have lashed out at news of a billionaire Brexit backer obtaining an EU passport. Jess North has been to find out more.
Have billionaires been betting against Brexit? Christopher Chandler is one of several billionaires who have bought their way into the EU despite being an advocate for Leave in the referendum. Chandler was able to purchase a Maltese passport for his family and himself and will be accompanied by other very rich colleagues. The move has been criticised by many as being hypocritical, but is it an indicator of lack of confidence in Brexit? Bill Roger, Treasurer of European Movement for Scotland, weighed in on the discussion with little surprise at the billionaire.
My opinion of Brexit has always been that the rich, the billionaires, will do very well out of it. If something crashes in the world of high finance, there's always plenty of vultures around to make a killing on that crash. And, they're not buying the bits and then selling them. They're simply betting on, the things moving one way or another. Now, I don't know whether this chap has done that, but I certainly know that during the referendum campaign, one of the other billionaire backers of one of the Brexit groups, I think it was the official one, Vote Leave, I think he certainly bet on the... he made a series of bets on the economy crashing and so on. So, these guys are totally unscrupulous, and they are only after one thing, and that is to increase the size of the banknotes.
Approval ratings have been on a steady decline, and dual national Brits are still cashing in their Irish passports. I spoke to Edinburgh lawyer Demir Jurek, who specialises in immigration, and was able to assess whether buying an EU passport was possible for average earners, but it seems the bad feeling is felt by all.
Obviously, if you have certain amount of money, you can, as it seems to be, literally buy yourself a passport. And that's what seems to be this guy. That's what he did. Which is kind of quite hypocritical, for someone who is going to argue, who obviously spent a lot of money arguing that Brexit is good for the UK, and then next thing he goes and he buys himself an EU passport.
We took to the streets to find out what would make Edinburgh residents leave Europe.
Stay in the UK.
Okay, do you have a reason why?
I'm British, so I guess that's a good reason. I don't see why I'd move to an EU country.
No,
I wouldn't. I kind of like Britain too much. And I would say that it's a complete mistake as leaving. And while this is a different part, while I voted no to Scottish independence, if Scotland could stay in Europe, I would vote yes in another one. To answer your question, no, I wouldn't move if we left, but I would happily stay in an independent Scotland.
Not at the minute, no.
But you might in the future.
Maybe in the future if there was job opportunities and things that were better over there, but not at the minute, no.
In light of the billionaire's actions and the recently leaked Brexit papers, there is now a call for the government to reassure the public that leaving won't be necessary.
And that was Jess North finishing that report. It's just coming up to 4:05. Here are today's headlines. The SNP have struck a deal with the Greens at Holyrood over the Scottish budget. The agreement covers all three stages of the process, meaning the Finance Minister Derek Mackay has the backing required to enact his plans in March. New figures show there's been a significant dip in Scots attending college. Scottish Funding Council's report found that although there was a slight increase last year, there's been a 38% fall in numbers over the last decade. Still to come. Are we obsessed with using our phones at concerts and gigs? Comedian Chris Rock is in the headlines at the moment after he banned mobiles and smartwatches from his UK tour this month. We'll speak to a local musician and venue owner. But now, over to Ryan Mayer with today's sports stories.
Thanks, Jamie. It's transfer deadline day, meaning football teams across the UK have until midnight tonight to complete their business. In Scotland, Celtic boss Brendan Rodgers is still hopeful of completing the signing of a goalkeeper, with number one Craig Gordon ruled out with a knee injury for 3 months. Motherwell have rejected a second bid from the Hoops of £375,000, and there are now reports that Rodgers is expected to make a move for Dundee goalkeeper Scott Bain.
The phone hasn't stopped all day for myself and Stevie Woods, my goalkeeping coach, and everyone else. So, of course, it's an attractive place to come and play here. So, naturally, you know, we have lots of agents doing work. Obviously, want to get the keepers in here.
Rangers have rejected a third bid of £8 million for their star striker, Alfredo Morelos, from Chinese Super League side Beijing Renny. With Morelos' future in the balance, Gersbros Graham Murty says he hopes to have the Colombian in the squad for tonight's Scottish Cup fourth round tie at Fraserburgh, despite the interest. One player who won't be involved at a Highland League club is Danny Wilson, after he joined the Colorado Rapids in the MLS. Murty says he's not on the lookout for a replacement.
We have options there. You never know, someone might come in for another one of our centre-halves. Would that, and that would necessitate a change in policy from us. But once again, it'll be a footballing decision based on improving our squad and enhancing our squad for the challenge at the end of the season.
Hibs have signed Grasshopper striker Florian Camberi on loan for the rest of the season. After mutually terminating the contract of forward Anthony Stokes last night, the Highbees are also confident of re-signing former midfielder Scott Allen on loan from Celtic. In England, Arsenal have broken their transfer record to complete a deal for Borussia Dortmund striker Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang for £56 million. Former Arsenal forward Alan Smith explains the lift that the signing will bring following the Gunners' league defeat to Swansea.
I think it's what the club needs. I mean, it was obviously a depressing night last night in South Wales. There's been a few too many of those over the last few years. But, I mean, it's a good step. It's a positive one for Arsenal. So the fans, I think, will be excited about it.
The deal could mean that Olivier Giroud will leave the Emirates with a reported £18 million move to London rivals Chelsea. Meanwhile, Michy Batshuayi left Stamford Bridge today to join Aubameyang's old club Dortmund on a loan deal until the end of the season. To rugby now, and Scotland have announced their squad to play Wales this weekend. Stuart Hogg is back and Ali Price keeps his place at scrum half despite Greg Laidlaw's return. Former Scotland international Grayson Hart told EN4 News exclusively that he believes this squad is good enough to win the Six Nations.
Anything can happen. So it's a very tough competition. You got the six teams that can have shown over the years anyone can win on the day. So, yeah, this will be a really, really great way to kick off the campaign if we can get an away win at Millennium Stadium.
The home of Scottish rugby, Murrayfield, is still being considered to be the new home of Scotland's football. Scottish FA officials last night declined applications by Rangers and Celtic to make Ibrox and Parkhead the venue. A final decision is expected later this week. And finally, in today's university fixtures, there are some enticing matchups for Team Napier. The ladies' hockey first team travel to Aberdeen for a second versus third matchup. A win would send them top of the Bucks division. Meanwhile, the men's basketball first team have a daunting trip to top of the table Queen Margaret University. The Queen Margaret first side have won every game this season. That's all for today's sport. You can catch up on all of our stories and a lot more online at en4news.com. Back to you, Jamie.
Thanks, Ryan. Now, have you ever been irritated by a person filming in front of you at a gig? I know I have. If so, a host of high-profile comedians and musicians share your annoyance. But should phones be banned from venues? Ewan Hawthorne has been to find out.
It was reported last week that a man was thrown out of a gig at Glasgow's SSE Hydro. An isolation, perhaps no great surprise. The big revelation being that the man was merely checking the condition of his sick father on his mobile phone. Chris Penham was asked to leave by security staff when he fell foul of comedian Chris Rock's mobile phone ban. It opens up a larger debate. Are performers out of line in banning phones? Or have the audience become too attached to their devices? Gus Limburn is a host at Edinburgh-based comedy club The Stand. He spoke about the importance of comedy content ownership.
If your material goes up and it goes viral and it's your content, then that's now no longer your content because it's out there and somebody else is maybe either making money or hits off it, and it's like, it's a shame because you can't use it, do you know what I mean? It's like, that's dead material, do you know? So that's the only thing I would say that makes phone usage a problem within these kind of places.
The Stand asks for the audience to switch off phones during the performance, and press officer Jen Laverley spoke about why she feels it's important to do this.
We do ask people to, you know, switch off their phones and not use them during the show, again, because even if you are, you know, even if your ketones are off and you're just sending a text message or something like that, then you're not listening to the show. We do want people to give their full attention.
She continued to mention that clip surfacing online is a different issue for established comedians versus newer acts.
I remember hearing Daniel Kitson talking about seeing a video of one of his first gigs and thinking, oh my God, it's going to be, you know, I can't wait to see what the young me thought of. And he said when he first came out, the first thing he said was, has anyone been watching The X Factor? Which, if you know Daniel Kitson now, then that's probably not something he would particularly want to be associated with. So I think, yeah, when you're starting out, if you get one of your first gigs filmed, it can be good for, you know, getting your face out there, sending it to promoters. But a very established comedian, if one of their first gigs showed up on YouTube, I doubt they would be quite as thrilled about that.
Out with the discussion about content ownership, up-and-coming comedian Ashley Bentley feels getting people off their phones might be a positive.
I do think it's not a bad thing to not be on your phone 24/7, especially if you've paid to go and see something as well. Like, you just, yeah, I think mental memories are better than, like, oh, here's a picture of something I went to see, but I have no memory of because I was taking pictures the whole time.
However, it's not just comedians who have a gripe with mobile phones at live performances. Local Edinburgh musician Rory Miller said he understands the irritation that it can be caused for other members in the audience.
I was at the War on Drugs in Barrowlands a few months ago. I was sort of mid-crowd, but like, it was just a wall of like hands in front of me with cameras, which was very like irritating. And it drops for a minute, and then the next song starts, and then it's back up, you know?
But he went on to mention that clips being published from gigs can help smaller artists with exposure.
You know, if someone showed up to my gig, didn't know the band, started recording, posted it on social media, and then tagged the band in it, it's a good thing, because it gets a little bit more of a broader reach, you know? Maybe their friends will then click on it, even if they don't listen, then they're kind of aware.
Whichever side of the conversation you find yourself on, it's likely you'll be seeing plenty of phones at gigs for some time to come.
Ewan Hawthorne reporting there. Now, the industry watchdog Transport Focus has released a new report showing a drop in ScotRail customer satisfaction in the past year, with daily commuters having the most scathing opinions of the company. Our reporter Katie McKenzie has been to Haymarket Station to gauge the mood.
How often do you find yourself cursing the train company on a crammed or delayed train? A new report has been published by watchdog Transport Focus, which indicates a drop in customer satisfaction rates from spring last year. The survey was carried out by passenger watchdog Transport Focus, which questioned about 1,400 ScotRail passengers from across Scotland. The survey found overall satisfaction fell from 90% last spring, which has been a record high for ScotRail, to 85% in the autumn. These figures see ScotRail drop from being the best performing operator across the UK last year.
Yes. Part number two will be the delayed 10:30 free bridge service to Aberdeen.
In a recent press release, Alex Hines, ScotRail's alliance manager, said,
"This survey shows customer satisfaction has improved compared to this time last year, and it's a clear sign of the progress that ScotRail is making. We aren't complacent, and we're working hard to build the best railway that Scotland has ever had."
I'm down at Haymarket Station today to see what the situation is like for commuters who have been held up by these disruptions. This report follows a really damning week for ScotRail, which saw most of their journeys last week disrupted in one way or another due to lack of carriages, signal failures or poor weather conditions, which led to landslides. I spoke to some commuters who have been held up or inconvenienced in some way to see what they had to say about ScotRail.
I would say generally it's good, but when the weather's bad, it's really bad. I came here last week and the trains were delayed because it was flooding on the line. It's flooding on the line every year, so they really should do something about it.
Yeah. Where I work, coming by train, I think those who use the Bathgate line say it is persistently, annoyingly, you know, just a few minutes late each way. There was something that happened last week between Queen Street. There was a landslip onto the line. A couple of people got caught in that. But I think that's very occasional.
It seems the unpredictability in ScotRail services is the key concern of commuters. With ScotRail pledging to improve their service, let's hope they can overcome the weather once and for all.
Now, is your job under threat? New research suggests sci-fi fantasy may be becoming a reality. As the think tank Centre for Cities predicts, 1 in 5 work posts in the UK will be taken by robots by the year 2030. Our technology correspondent, Lee Dalgetty, has more.
Is your job safe? No longer a part of sci-fi fiction, robots are predicted to take 1/5 of UK posts by the year 2030. New research from Centre for Cities forecasts 3.6 million jobs could be overtaken by machines, generally jobs that are made up of routine tasks. Cities in the north are at a greater risk, with bigger cities like London, Edinburgh and Cambridge less exposed to shrinking occupation opportunities. We spoke to some of Edinburgh's workers who are at risk from losing jobs to robots, who were concerned at the prospect. Fast food worker Gregor told us he saw this problem coming.
I work as a supervisor in Five Guys. When I look at McDonald's and see that ordering has already been taken over by computers, it's a constant worry in my life.
Recent times I've noticed that the wage budget's already extremely tight and there aren't enough staff working in the shop. It's quite likely that when it's given the opportunity for computers to take over people's jobs and to save labour costs, that it will come through pretty quickly because pretty low staffed already and closes take a long time. Whereas with a computer or whatever, it might be a bit quicker.
Taxi driver Simon also expressed concern.
To be fair, I mean, at the end of the day, if a robot's going to do the job, then it'll probably, I would imagine, that, you know, the cost of a taxi, the journey will come down because you're not having to pay a driver who's then going to support family and children, etc. So, you know, all said and done, it might be better for the public in the future, but not the best thing in the world either, you know.
So what does this mean for your job then? Simon Jeffrey from Centre for Cities told us what sectors are most at risk from automation.
Well, it's any sort of job which is more routinised, more repetitive, that you can imagine a machine doing or being sent overseas to be done more cheaply. So that's things like, you know, people that work in retail cashiers, customer service workers. So, you know, the risks do go up the scale of higher skilled jobs, but we do see it much more predominantly in those lower skilled jobs.
Centre for Cities don't think that automation will have a completely negative impact.
The key issue for us is to make sure that we prepare people, to make sure young people leaving school have the skills to get those higher skilled jobs. We make sure that people can adapt so that there's lifelong learning for people already in work to, you know, transition to the newer jobs.
So what does this mean for the future of Scotland's capital?
Well, we look at the number of jobs at risk of automation or globalisation in Edinburgh, about 60,000. Because there's more high-skilled jobs and lots of high-skilled people in Edinburgh, that's, you know, lower as a proportion than in other Scottish cities. But as we say, there's more, you know, we think more jobs are going to be created by this.
It may seem a distant threat, but Centre for Cities argued that with preparation, it is a manageable concept.
And finally, roses are red, violets are blue. How about a romantic steak pie dinner for two? Selena Tyan reports on a very alternative Valentine's supper.
Greggs has come up with their latest marketing event, which is a Valentine's Day special dinner course. They seem to have pulled all their stops to advertise this Valentine's Day concept to the public. We talked to a staff member from Greggs, down at Brunsfield, about this event.
I'm Josh, and I'm a senior sales in Greggs. To me, it's just a part of the advertising and marketing.
Oh, okay.
We've not been given a sort of reason for it, I guess. As far as I'm aware, it's all Greggs products, so it's everything you would get in on the go, just on a plate, I guess, essentially.
While you may boost their revenue, other local bakeries are less thrilled with their choice of marketing. Jack, a barista from Falco, expressed his thoughts on this issue in our interview.
I don't know who's going to Greggs for their Valentine's Day special Valentine's Day dinner. I suppose it takes all sorts. If they have a huge amount of people coming in on Valentine's Day, that's a good move. I definitely see a lot more advertising. We don't do any advertising just because we're a local kind of branch and we just get people coming in by word of mouth and stuff, but I definitely see a lot more people, a lot more advertising for sort of teddy bears and chocolates and all sorts. Lots of people trying to tie their product into Valentine's Day somehow.
While this can be clearly seen as a publicity stunt, it does work for a business like itself. I spoke to John Thompson, a senior lecturer in marketing, to ask about his opinions on consumer behaviours and competitions in businesses.
I think anyone in business to grow and sustain the business in a competitive environment, they have to think of new ways of doing that. But generally, if it's just doing it for the wrong reasons, then it won't improve their competitiveness. And maybe they would be better thinking what's at the heart of their business. You know, what is it the consumer is looking for in terms of a special experience on a special occasion?
These strategies are often used by businesses, especially during holidays. But overdoing it causes the holidays to lose its true meaning as well. So, is it going to be a romantic dinner or steak pie for you?
Steak pie for me, I think. Selena Tyan finishing off that report there. And here are today's closing headlines. The Scottish Government have secured a deal with the Greens in order to push the budget through Parliament. The Finance Secretary Derek Mackay is addressing MSPs regarding the agreement. The number of Scottish students attending college has dropped by a third in the last decade. A report by the Scottish Funding Council shows that whilst there was a slight increase last year, there's been an overall drop of 38% since 2007. And now Saskia Williams with the weather and travel news. And it's a little wintry out there today, Saskia.
Indeed it is. A cold front began in the northwest of Scotland today and is advancing down south. Temperatures are expected to plummet to -2 degrees Celsius in some towns and cities after a mild spell this weekend just passed. Scotland's Transport Minister Humza Yousaf has also urged people to plan ahead if travelling. A statement from the Met Office said, following a spell of rain, temperatures will fall quickly, allowing ice to form on untreated surfaces. Some roads and railways are likely to be affected by snow, with longer journey times by road, bus and train services. The Met Office has issued a yellow warning for snow and ice, which will stay in place until 6 p.m. this evening for the majority of Edinburgh. The M74 is currently being hit with snow, with snail pace delays both ways at Junction 12 Millbank and Junction 13 Ebbington. HGVs are struggling with traction northbound, with three gritters working on the scene. On the M8 between Junction 18 and Junction 19, traffic queuing heavily on approach for a broken down car. Drivers are being urged to take care on the M74, M77 and M8. Anyone travelling on the M90 northbound or southbound today, do so with caution, as there have been delays on and off all day due to weather and accidents. That's all on weather and traffic for now. Back to you, Jamie.
Thanks, Saskia. And that's all from Radio Energy News for now, but you can catch up with all the latest stories on our website.
This is Radio Energy News.